the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, just two fired coaches with all the world's answers on hoops and everything else, solving the world's problems and trying to figure out the chaos, I would say chaos, in college basketball during finals weeks, which we know finals week is kind of a little different on a college campus. D squared, what do you make of Ball State, Notre Dame? What do you make of Washington and Kansas? What do you make of Loyola and Florida?
I started saying this last year, and I believe this, Seth. Every night college basketball delivers. It does every night. Like, used to be, and I'm going to date myself and probably you. You had to wait till Saturday. And for us in Indiana, Indiana-Purdue might be on during a week. And there might be against, you know, Notre Dame one time. But you had to wait for Saturday. And now every night college basketball delivers. I'm shocked at the, I'm not going to say demise, but certainly the downturn of Florida's season. I just can't imagine from where they were and how they were playing in Portland, the confidence, the togetherness. You know, I know they don't have their wings, but still, my goodness. Seth, I that's my answer. Every night. There are so many good players, 13 scholarships, guys going everywhere, so many good coaches. Porter Mosier at Loyola Chicago's done a great job. But Seth, every night the sport delivers. And
they lost to Boise State by 35 their last game.
Yeah. All right, let me ask you.
Crazy.
Give people a little education. It's exam weeks. Can I just say this? And my son at Ohio State stayed up. So I get frustrated when people tell me there's no such thing as a student athlete. My son is a fifth year guy, stayed up till 4 a.m. getting a presentation done and studying for an exam the day of the Ohio State Michigan game. He stayed up till 4 a.m. the night before, or the night of, I guess. So don't tell me there's no student athlete. So does exams factor into this?
Yeah, I do. I do think. Here's my take. If you're the home team, and you're playing a guarantee game. Like, I looked at the crowd at the Florida game. Crickets.
Yeah.
Absolute crickets at the game because it's finals week. And you're scheduling a game during finals week, and all of a sudden you beat a PK80, and you're playing Duke, and you're doing all these great things. And then all of a sudden you roll out to the old new old dome, which is an unbelievable facility. And, like, all there are is, like, people basically dressed as empty seats.
Yeah.
And the whole upper bowl. And it's different, and then there's a different environment, and you have finals, and there's no atmosphere, and it's the week before. I tell you, this week, Thanksgiving week, and the week that the students leave after finals, and all of a sudden you come back, and all your friends are leaving, and there's no one on campus but the men's team and the women's team, and it's just, it's a different feeling, a different environment. It is hard for the home team. Having said that, that's not an excuse. It's not an excuse. It's a reality, and you got to give credit to Ball State. You got to give credit to Loyola. You got to give credit to Washington. But it is true to me. People don't understand these kids. They are students. They are studying for tests. They all do have to get papers in. Oh, and by the way, when you're used to playing games that are events, and then you roll in, and there's like 5,000 people in 11 or 12 or 13 or 14,000 seat facility, there's an issue. And then on top of that, if you're a team that lives by the three, I know Coach Knight said this because I know Coach Lababo told me this every day. If you live by it, back then it was just the jumper. If you live by the jumper, you die by the jumper.
Yeah.
And if you look at Notre Dame, very little interior scoring. You look at Florida, very little interior scoring. And you look at Kansas, very little interior scoring. I mean, Kansas, here's the deal. Kansas, Florida was 2 for 19 from the three-point line. You're not winning. Mm-mm. Kansas was 5 for 20 from the three-point line. You're not winning. I mean, that's just the way. Notre Dame was out-rebounded by 9 offensive rebounds. You got to be a lot better than your opponent.
Well,
that's just the way it is. So that means you're not ready to play. And if you live by the three, you die by the three sometimes.
Yeah, I think everything you said was right. And I watched some of that Notre Dame
usually
game. Yeah, well, of course. course. And if you don't think so, go to Seth's Twitter and read his comments about hoops. He who shall not be named just now. Well,
yeah, we're not naming his name.
But let me go to Ball State for just a second here. Now, here's the thing that I've really liked about Ball State and the job James Whitford's done. Like, they had enough size. They played big games. Like, he went out, and this is what you have to do to mid-major so people understand. He went out and he played a couple of teams in his schedule for us. I talked to him yesterday. For ESPN, he went out and look, he played Oregon. He played Oklahoma. And because what he wanted to do was get in a major event next year. So next year, they're in the Charleston Classic. So he went out and played those people. But he also went out there knowing that he has a pretty good team. You know, and if you don't show up and all those circumstances now come out, what you're talking about, Seth, then you have a real chance for an upset. And the caveat, and this is what I think is so interesting about,
you know, never have enough caveats.
Well, the caveat is you got to have a tough, tough dude that can make shots. And nobody in the world, other than people in Indiana, have ever heard of Taylor Persons. But Taylor Persons was a great football player. Taylor Persons, I've been watching him since my son and him were at the same Purdue camp 6,000 years ago. And he just lifted up over another tough dude, the wing defender for Notre Dame, Pfluger, Rex Pfluger, and just lifted up and said, to hell with it. This is what I'm going to do. And it's just, you got to have a combination of those things. And Taj Teague, Trey Moses, they're big enough. These teams are good. Like, Ball State didn't have their whole team. Now they do. These teams are good. Xavier, really good. You know, Loyola Chicago, I don't know anything about them, but I know that they were Chicago was good enough to go in there and play in a game that you should have no chance to play. And so that tells me somewhere in that they've got some tough guys, really tough guys. So, hey, college basketball delivers everything.
As a coach, don't you think those were like, I used to call them throw-up games, because before the games –
no,
like
you puke. And
sick to your stomach.
As a mid-major guy in scheduling, I mean, a true deep mid-major with no budget when I was at Bowling Green, you had to play road games, right? You had to play, bye games. I had to make, a couple hundred thousand a year, so I wouldn't play. So here's what you do before Christmas. You decide, all right, I'm either going to play a home game against the easiest team in the world, which is what I did a lot. You know, I found the worst Division III team, because I didn't care. We're going to have a Merry Christmas. Or you went on the road and played a team that you know was going home after the game or had exams. One of those two things before Christmas, because you knew they would be distracted. And I'm telling you, it works a lot with going on the road as a MAC team playing a game like that. So, hey, good for everybody. I don't know if it's great for college basketball or not, but it's great for those schools, no question.
You know, that's a good point, because I remember Rick Majerus used to find the absolute worst team humanly possible to play during that time. And Terry Holland actually played like a Division VII team.
Yeah, I did.
When he was athletic director at East Carolina and at Davidson. So, it makes sense. It's just a hard game. Like, to me, if you have young players, those games are hard because they're going through finals for the first time. They see everyone leaving campus, yet they know they're stuck on campus. Or, Thanksgiving, if you're not on the road for a good tournament, you're playing just a couple of home games. Those things are emotional. And I don't think I used to spend so much time with my team during those times because I wanted to make sure they knew they had someone there for them because they didn't have their family there for them at those times. So I just think, look, great wins for Ball State, great wins for Loyola, and, great win for Mike Hopkins. I call it a culture and a program win. And, coming to it, let's bring it back to those two top teams, Florida and Kansas. Kansas was exposed yesterday. They have one front court player, Udoka Azubuike. They have one front court player. If they don't get Silvio D'Souza eligible mid-semester, who's trying to graduate early, who's 6'9", and can rebound the ball, they're not winning the Big 12, as good as their home court is, because Udoka Azubuike, he can't play but 25 minutes physically. He gets in foul trouble. They are small. You live by the three, you die by the three. I mean, Devontae Graham's been, he had 34 and 34, I think, back-to-back games. They took them out. Now, Washington plays a great, great zone. The same thing with Florida. I said this when they were rolling and absolutely got destroyed by the Florida Gator faithful. All of a sudden, they think they're Kentucky. They're fans. I mean, they think they're Kentucky. All of a sudden, you don't know. I said they're a really good team, but they have no one to throw the ball down low. They don't put any pressure on the rim. They struggle protecting the rim. And until they get something like that, I think they're good, but they're not that good. And that's become, once again, you're just trying to educate the world.
Yeah.
That's become a reality. So, I mean, look, I know that because I've had teams like that. And that's the thing. Like, when you watch certain teams, we're starting to see flaws. Like, last night against Washington, you know, they put LeGerald Vick in the middle of that zone. He did a good job. But you know what? They took away the three-point shot. And Mike Hopkins, great job, said, you know what? Here's what you're not doing. I saw the Syracuse game. You're not beating us with the three. When the ball goes to the middle, we're going to play the pass with the big, and we're matching up man-to-man on everyone else. They took that away. That's a flaw in Kansas's team right now. This might be the year. What do you think?
No. I will never say
no.
It, no.
You
I,
went no.
I,
you well, went without it. I mean, it was. You didn't even think about it.
No. No.
No.
No.
No.
I've seen Oklahoma. They're all right. Texas, man, they're all right. Until you beat Kansas in that league, I'm saying Kansas. I think all right. But I'm not. I shouldn't say no so quickly. I just thought it was interesting.
Sure you should.
Yeah, I know. Because that's how I feel.
I'd be disappointed. If you vacillated a little bit, I would have said, man, Kyle's going to have a bad show today.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. Let's go to Washington for just a second and Kansas. I think it's really interesting that Kansas, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they just chew up Boeheim zone a week ago or so?
Yes, they did.
And people always think you get in a zone and you stand there, right? Because it's a zone.
Like a weather vane.
Right.
Like a weather
vane. But no. No. Jim Boeheim has said this for years. We scout. We do the same things you do in man-to-man. We adjust. And I think you're talking about Mike Hopkins last night adjusting because of exactly what you said. Go ahead and beat us in the middle of the zone. Go ahead. I mean, look, Kansas, I don't think there's a team out there other than Duke that isn't flawed. Like, I think if Duke decides we want to be a tough defensive team, at some point in the year they could be that. I think they score so freaking easy. Like, I sit there and I go, compared to everybody else, Duke, and maybe, and I know they got a loss, and I know they lost to Duke, but maybe Michigan State as well. That don't have a real weakness. I'm not talking about, okay, you know, there's going to be a day where, you know, Langford doesn't shoot it for Michigan State or whatever. But I don't think those two teams are starting to separate themselves as not having big-time real weaknesses. Would you agree with that or no?
No, yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, Duke, you hit it right on the money. I mean, they can drop 110, 120 on you and just by playing. And they get extra possessions on the glass. They score it around the block. Now, they don't shoot it as well as they had to. And if you're going to beat Duke, and we talked about it in your radio show yesterday, you're going to have to make that a tempo game. You're going to have to make them find a way to disrupt their rhythm because you're not going up and down the court and outscoring them. So you've got to do something to get them off out of some type of rhythm because they attack you in transition, they attack you on the glass, they get second opportunities. You know, can you just not, like, I don't know if I would guard Trayvon Duval past the foul line, and I'd leave him open. All right, and that guy would be doubling the post, jamming the lane, and basically say, Trayvon, if we're going to lose, you are going to get 30, and that's kind of what Washington did yesterday to Kansas. They said, you know, we're going to lose you. LeGerald Vick, you're going to catch it in the middle here. You're going to shoot contested shots over our big. We're not going to give you the dunk. We're going to get matched up, but we're not giving that into the middle. Kick it out to the wing, you know, wide open step in threes. And no, I totally agree with that. I think Michigan State, I mean, think about this. They go into Rutgers, a grinded out low possession game. Tom benches Nick Ward because he was basically playing like a marshmallow. And not kind of competing, doesn't even play. Yet they figure out a way to win by 10 points. Wasn't their best effort. I think it was their sixth game in like 13 days. Pretty good win on the road. I mean, just you got it. You get, that's one of those games, as you know, When you play back-to-back games and you're pushing your team pretty good, certain games you just got to go and find a way to win.
Yes.
And get out of there. Like, yes. People don't understand. Well, yeah, they should blow those guys up.
No.
You know what you got to do? You only can push that button so many times. So you know what? Sometimes you got to say, lace it up. We're better than them. Go out, compete hard, play hard. We'll grind it out. We'll get a win, and we'll get out of here. People, I think that's what the average fan, and fan is short for fanatic, and I'm not degrading them, but when you live it, you don't understand that there's certain times you just got to get out with a win and move on.
Exactly right. Because let's face it now, let's go from the other side. Michigan State walks into the rack. Guess what? The rack is as lively as it's ever been. It's going to be all year. And so there, you got to give the other team's on scholarship too. So yeah. Not only are you in a situation where you played all these games, not only are you in a situation where, you know, you're grinding, you're tied, whatever, but the other team's pretty jacked. I thought this. I love the fact that Izzo let Ward sit. But I didn't love the fact that Ward sulked. Like, why? I will go on a rant every time I see it when somebody sulks. Like, what the hell? Who taught somebody to sulk? Whoever's the guy that started this whole sulking thing, I'm going to sit on you. Because just stop with the sulking, for the love of God. And then, you know, Tom did Tom things, which is say, hey, it's not going to be a deal, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. But, dang, nobody handles those things better than Tom Izzo. And Ward will be better for it. May take a game, you know, but he'll be better for it. And quite frankly, Michigan State will be better for it. But I do think this. I do think that Michigan State has shown that they can, they can guard. They can guard hard. They will guard hard. And when they do that, again, I know they lost to Duke, but let's be honest, man. Grayson Allen was throwing him in from behind his head. So I just think those two teams have the least downside and have been the least exposed. Let's go that route.
No, I agree, and I think I agree with you. Everyone has flaws. I mean, you look at the SEC, which I think is a really good league and a deeper league than it's been. And, you know, Alabama, you know, bounces back, has a great win against Rhode Island, but lost the other day. And, you know, you look at the top of the league, Texas A&M, you know, goes on the road, and you think maybe, you know, maybe this is it. Arizona bounces back and gets a win, and even though it wasn't a home game, it was a grinded out game. So everyone, I think all these teams, and I think this is what fans have to understand, all these teams are still developing an identity. And there are some teams that I watch that still don't have an identity. And the sooner a team develops an identity of knowing who they are and how they win, as opposed to just playing and trying to win, the better off those teams are. Because, like, you know, like I watched Louisville the other day. I wasn't sure. I liked their team. I wasn't sure of their identity. Like, I liked Seton Hall. They have an identity. They're a bunch of tough city dudes that, you know, run that little matchup zone and can create isolations and play to their strengths, and no one tries to do anything they can't do, and that's the deal. Now, speaking of that, of guys that can't doing what they can't do, you know what Steve Alford can't do?
Tell me.
He can't put a ball in the game.
Good.
He's playing without a ball.
Good.
I mean, and by the way, he was the last one to know it.
Isn't that amazing?
Now, seriously. So you have a child. I'm not mentioning names. So I'm not going to mention first name. That's my new thing.
Yeah.
First name never gets mentioned. Yeah. You have a child that goes overseas, makes a bad decision. And he might be a great kid, but even good kids make bad decisions. I'm all for that. University goes through all this rigmarole. Fortunately, the kids come back. It becomes an institutional issue then, you know, as you and I think both talk, it goes to university actually has, you know, a judicial affairs or student. What's the right word I'm looking for?
Help student me, affairs.
You're a wordsmith.
Goes to student affairs.
Thank you. That's why you're a radio guy.
Yeah,
And they basically take the thing over. It's out of Steve Alford's hands. It's out of the athletic department's hands. It's in student affairs hands. And for some reason or another, they're waiting and they're looking at it and trying to make the best decision for the institution and also do the right thing, you know, for the kids in terms of, do we keep in school? Do we kick them out of school? Do they have to sit out a semester or a quarter or whatever? And before anything that happens, after all the work that everyone has done, a parent, because we're not mentioning his name, decides to just take his son without even communicating with the head coach, who I think kind of bent over backwards a tad. What's your take on that?
I think that Steve Alford got the greatest Christmas present you could ever get. And God bless, I don't even know the kid's name, LaMelo, LaMangelo, whatever the hell his name is. And God bless, I'll say his name, LeVar Ball. God bless all of them. Good for them. But I know that Steve Alford is not upset by this. I know that Steve Alford is happy about this. Who wouldn't be? Like, you've got a guy that is criticizing an NBA team and their kid, and he's doing it as a joke. And we all fall for this joke. I don't. I refuse to. I just say, look, I thought he was a great parent at one point. Now I think it's a complete blank show. But, look, Steve got a great break. UCLA got a great break. And somebody else wants to take the kid. Fantastic. Kid wants to go overseas. God bless him. Kid wants to stay in the backyard with his dad. Good for him. My only problem, and I asked my son this, what would you say if I pulled you out of whatever school because of my ego? And he just said, Dad, I wouldn't let you. I'm like, I know. You know, he goes, I would have been a hard time because you were paying, but I wouldn't have let you. He goes, it wouldn't have happened. I go, I guess exactly right. So Steve got a hell of a break. He really did. Because with this kid, I don't even care if he's good, he's not good. I don't care. With this whole thing exploding, you got to understand, Seth, in the world we live in, LaVar Ball is actually a hero. Like, we can say whatever we want, but my man is a hero. I've seen pictures of him, you know, coming in front of people, the masses. And, I mean, this dude is a hero. So, like I said, good for him. Go be a hero. But this is all at some point, hopefully not, because I hate to root against a kid, but it seems like this is all going to come crashing down at some point, because usually arrogance comes crashing down. I mean, usually it just does. And kids grow up. They want to move along. Like, I use the Krzyzewski thing. Krzyzewski was great with Coach Knight, and Coach Knight was great with Krzyzewski until Krzyzewski wanted to get away from Coach Knight. Because, hey, look, I'm my own guy here. And at some point, and rightfully so for Coach K, well, at some point these kids are going to be like, hey, look, I'm my own guy here. Now, at some point.
And let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So, like, those guys are going to become their own guy. That's great. And
40,
you know,
maybe.
Lonzo Ball is going to make a lot of money. He's going to be in the league. He's, you know, like, to me, he's Ricky Rubio. That's just my opinion. He could get better because he's so young, but he's a great. He sees the floor. He's a good passer. He has no middle game because he releases it low. Hasn't proven he can shoot the 3-point shot. Good rebound for his position, but you know, I like it. I mean, he has a chance, but right now he might not even be as good as Ricky Rubio. Who knows? But so he's a pro. All right. The other two guys that just got pulled out of school and said he's going to be an NBA player. First of all, well, the old narrative, well, we'll just go overseas. That's a joke, all right? Because you don't just go overseas, because if you don't produce overseas, he's not good enough to go overseas, all right? But so is having a parent of an NBA player questioning the organization.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And the coaching staff on a daily basis. And making light of getting arrested in a communist country. Like, this isn't getting arrested in Compton for shoplifting a pair of sunglasses. This is getting arrested in a communist country. And, oh, it's no big thing. They just stole sunglasses. In a communist country. I mean, it's a little different. So, like, here's my thing. Is like, the two other sons, we don't know. But right now, we do know one thing. We know one guy was taken out of school and said he's not going to go back to school. He's not going to have a college education. All right, so eventually, unless Big Baller Brand or whatever it is blows up, what's going to happen? And then the youngest guy who's driving around some Lamborghini, which is great. I'm happy. Look, I agree with you. I think the dad has done a lot of great things. I mean, like, it seems like Lonzo Ball's a terrific kid. But, you know, my thing is eventually those kids are going to have to spread their wings and be their own guy. And are they ready to, or has he just gotten to the point where he hovers so hard over these kids that they never get a chance to develop their own personalities? Like, you watch Lonzo Ball after games get interviewed, he's almost like programmed. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. You know, look, the thing that everybody's into is, you know, he's a great entertainer, he sells, and all that kind of stuff. If he wants to take his kids out, take your damn kids out. If he wants to take his other son and not put him in, and then God bless you. I mean, you know, God bless you. But to me, again, you and I grew up in a different era. If our fathers were hovering over me, if I was a professional basketball player, I'd say, hey, man, you know what? I'm out. Don't do this. Stop this. Shut up. I'm a pro. Leave me alone. And he's not doing that. He's smart about it. He blames Luke Walton, who's the easy target, and tries to stay close to Magic Johnson. I was reading, you know, what he had to say. Me and Magic got good communication. I mean, all right, that's great. Me got good communication. It's Luke Walton, you know, who's screwing this up. Well, Luke Walton's the easy target. So Lonzo Ball is smart enough, and I just think he's getting over on everybody. I think his whole thing is a nonsensical act. Here's what you have in the media now. You've got a bunch of guys just out of college because they're cheap, get hired by different, dot coms, whether it's CBS or whatever, and newspapers. So they're cheap. These guys have no idea what they're doing. You know, used to be you had to come through the ranks as a newspaper guy. Now you just get out of college, they fire by and we're going to hire you out of college because you make $10 an hour. Okay.
And everyone can run a blog.
Yeah, and you fall in love with this guy. So next thing you know, you don't know you're being – I think he's playing everybody. I look at the smile on his face, and I think he thinks he's Muhammad Ali. And you know what? It's worked because here we are talking about it from a purely basketball –
Yeah, we says 20 minutes. I won't mention his name now.
Yeah, no, you won't. But, you know, if I'm a kid in the NBA, at some point you just have to, if you're Lonzo and you want to be a teammate. Here's the other thing. The kid who stole stuff in China, what's his name, LiAngelo? LaMelo? The hell's his name?
Yeah. He sold out.
He sold out his teammates. Like, not only is he a thief, not only is he a petty thief, but he's a rat. He sold out his guy, and he's a follower, and he's a rat. And the word on the street was he was the only guy that stole from all three stores. So, look, in my world, you stole with your buddies. You didn't steal because of your buddies. So tell me the NBA team that wants to be around that guy. Look, you and I live in a different world, man. Stand up, you know, to whoever you think you're standing up to, and you become a cultural icon. So I guess it's no big deal that he ratted out his buddies. But the dude ratted out his buddies, period.
He would not fit into the Doncic family mantra, which is
sack up. Things go bad. Sack up. Hey, my kids, people laugh at it. My daughter has used it so many times. My son used it. My nephews, my whole family. Hey, sack the hell up.
Oh my God. Let's get off of that.
Please.
Let's get off of that. Did you hear the conversation or read the article the other day about, Roy Williams thinks that deliberate NCAA rule guys should be banned. That sounds like a Dan Doncic sack up take that basically if you think it's deliberate NCAA rules violators. And look, that sounds good, but I think people have a harder time hearing it from Coach because of everything that went on at North Carolina. And like, again, he's been cleared all that stuff, but it's still coming from him. There are going to be people, whether they're cynics or whether they're Duke fans or whether they're fans of another school, say, wait a second. You guys had fictitious classes for 30 years. What's the deal on that? What's your take on that?
My take is Roy's the wrong guy to deliver the message because Roy can spin it, and I'm glad he does, and I'm glad he got cleared. But the public is like, I don't give a damn who's cleared. Look, you guys had fake classes. My take on Roy Williams, Seth, true story. I've been saying what Williams said for years now. And actually, the only time it's ever gotten traction is when Urban Meyer was working for us at ESPN. He came on my show, and we had a very frank discussion about, look, that exact thing, because that has been my belief, and I've been very public. But I'm nobody. Like, if I could get Billis to say it, or I could get, you know, Josina Anderson, or I can get, you know, Sal Pal or somebody, I guess. But I've been saying this forever. You draw a line. Above this line are major violations. Below this line, we can deal with. Made too many phone calls, texts, whatever. All right? But above this line, if you break these rules willingly, you are banned from coaching Division I basketball. I've said this forever. Go coach in the NBA. We're not taking away your livelihood. All these coaches, Larry Brown, Mark Few, I would coach in high school. Yeah, okay, well, then go coach in high school if you knowingly break rules. NAIA, Division II, Division III. I don't care. There's plenty of plurals, overseas, whatever. There's plenty of places you can coach. But I've said this for years. I have said it because I believe that the reward, particularly for a lot of these clowns that come from some AAU program and can get a few players and are going to go make $300,000, these clowns can't make that kind of money doing anything else. I've said for years, if you deliberately break these rules, and here's the line, here it's black and white, you are banned from coaching Division I men's college basketball. I just believe that to be, but I think Roy's the wrong guy to deliver that message, because I don't care what was cleared, the public thinks and knows, and it's a fact, that they had fake classes going on at North Carolina, and that's just the way it is, so Roy's the wrong guy. I'm the right guy to deliver that message, damn it.
Well, you just did.
Yeah, I've been saying it for years.
I mean, I really know what? And anyone who's pretty intelligent probably is listening to this podcast and has just been educated. So I think that's a good thing.
I agree.
I mean, I just, you know, I think that's, you know, that person is
do
better
you think
off.
Roy, you think Roy's the wrong guy? Who would be a good guy to deliver that message?
I do. I think John Beilein would be good. Yeah. Probably Izzo would be good. I think that Fuey would probably be a good ambassador for that. I mean, there are a lot of guys.
Yeah, I agree.
Mean, John Thompson would have been a good ambassador for that. I mean, there you Kunzo Martin, I would think, would probably be a good, you know, ambassador for that. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of guys. I mean, look, here's the deal is, the biggest question would be, where do you draw that line? All right. So to you, what is a major violation? Well, what is a minor violation? What is one where you say, you know what? All right, you messed up.
I think anytime you have payment for a player to come to your school, and I think anytime you have a payment.
What about if you're paying a guy once he gets there?
That's what,
like,
I was going to say.
Like, here's my
that's
thing.
What I was going to say. I was just going to say that. And I think payment outside the NCAA regulations, whether you like them or not, every place has to have rules. Payment outside the regulations to keep them there, and I think that's automatic. I just think those two things. Any inducement outside of the NCAA rules to get a kid there, or to keep a kid there, or to enhance while he's there, is a major violation. I don't think it's that hard. I mean, I know we make things hard, and coaches, you know, as you well know and I well know, the rule book is thick, not because the NCAA put in a bunch of rules to begin with, but because coaches have been smart enough, or I guess smart enough, devious enough, to circumvent rules, so you got to add amendments. So that's what I think, just off the top of my head right now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I'm interested to see, with everything that's gone on in our deal, you know, and all this FBI thing, who knows when it's going to, you know, come to an end. In this, obviously, we have this commission on college athletics. I was taken aback by Mark Emmert this week when he said, "Well, you know, if you're just coming to be a pro, you know, you shouldn't come at all." You know, I mean, that would, like I usually defend, like everyone is an evil and everything that the NCAA does isn't bad. But that was one that I have to admit, if I had hair, I'd be scratching the hair on the top of my head. I mean, that was like, here's the deal. Well, until they change the rule where a guy can come out of high school, you know, but guys are going to go somewhere. Number two is, anytime you spend on campus, and I'm a big believer in this, any time you spend on a campus for a person is going to be a good experience. It's going to help that person. And maybe I'm way off on that, but I've always believed that. And I think that for anyone to have a chance to spend time on a college campus, to interact, to meet people, to what I call crossing over, meet different types of people from different cultures and everything, I think that's a great opportunity for that person.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Don't you think, you know, everybody calling for the one and done deal to be gone, all right? If you're a college basketball fan, are you glad Marvin Bagley's here? You know what I mean? Trae Young, yeah. I watch Trae Young, man. That dude is like,
ooh.
I mean, everybody thinks they're Seth
Curry. How about the shots that guy makes?
Yeah. So you get him for at least a year. I'm for the one and done rule being gone. I am. I'm for saying, I don't understand the logic of not letting a kid go into a profession out of high school. I mean, hell, there's a lot of, okay, football, you can't do it because you get killed. The bodies are different. I get all that. But we better be careful saying this one and done is horrible, because you're not going to have Trae Young in here. You're not going to have Bagley in here. You know, you're not going to have that. And Sexton. So I'm with you on it. Like, I think if you, if my dad told me 1,000 years ago, I mean 1,000 years ago, best 4 years of your life is going to be college. And he wasn't lying.
Oh, yeah. You know,
so, and I'm not saying that's in place of more money. Or I'm just saying from if we're just going to talk about the argument of being on college, there ain't nothing wrong with being at college. So, you know, I'm with you on it, Seth. Let me ask you a question about it. Is it possible or is it not possible? Because everybody asks me this, and I've gotten answers that it's not possible. Can you go to baseball and say 3 years? Is that something that is not even in the realm for college basketball?
I don't think it's in the realm. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that has any chance of.
I don't either.
Of becoming a reality in our sport. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen because you know. And I, you know, I'm not sure it should be happening in baseball.
I'm not either. I don't know.
But you know what? You know what we are going to understand?
Tell me.
We're going to understand that George Clooney of college coaching,
yes.
My man, Jay Wright, the most underappreciated coach, because everyone looks at the nice suits and the pocket squares and all that jazz, and they don't understand just how good and hard and well these teams play and how fundamentally sound they are. But when we come back, we're going to have Villanova head coach and probably the number two team in the country, I would think, next week. Coach Jay Wright joined us. How's that?
Sounds good. I love that guy.
D squared. Big day today. Big day. Huge. I mean, big. This is a big day. Huge. Because we get to invite in, welcome in our guy, Jay Wright, of the Villanova Wildcats. One of the favorite teams in probably all of Philadelphia.
How you doing, guys?
I mean, J-Boy. Unbelievable. Had a chance courtside to watch you guys against Gonzaga, a really good team. I mean, like a really good team. I'll tell you the thing that impressed me. I've watched you guys practice for, obviously, the last 4 years with Jackie G up there. And then your team.
Jackie G, one of our Villanova volleyball legends here, now in law school.
Legends. Yes, in law school.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, the way we do it in Villanova. The girls are beautiful, they're smart, and they're great athletes. Now, what else do you want to tell my guys? They should marry these Villanova girls. I tell them that.
I love it.
So, I mean, like, your team is like the big fundamental. I mean, like, I'm watching even your practice shoot around. Everything's two hands. Everything's two hand pass, two hand patch, jump fake, jump stop, ball fake, shot fake. I mean, it's – and you see your upperclass. Mikael Bridges is telling the young guys, hey, come to a jump stop. Two hands. Hey, pivot. Stay low. How have you been able to get your guys in today's culture of college basketball, seriously, to buy into being that fundamentally sound of doing things the right way every time?
Well, it's great to be able to share this with you. You and Dan, who guys I really respect as coaches, I really do. And to just having said that, and you've watched us practice for 4 years, isn't it funny to see how much time we spend on it, and then we get into the game, and we still throw one-handed passes and do go off one foot a lot more than that's coaching, right? You see, you know, you got the older guys saying it, but then the young guys still go in there, and it's what coaching is all about, right? You might do it 100% of the time in the game. They might do it 70% of the time. But we do get intelligent guys. You know, it's a high academic school, so we get guys that are intelligent. We get guys that, you know, if you look at the parents of our guys, most of them are college athletes themselves. And they give you a chance to coach them. They really do. It sounds simple, but I know you guys understand it. Sometimes guys come in, they just feel like, okay, I got my game, fit my game into this team. Don't mess with my game. And we really are fortunate to have guys that have parents that say, hey, we want him to come there. We want him to learn. We want him to get better. We know he's talented, but we want him to get better. And they really are coachable.
Your team right now, you've had a run that's incredible in terms of, you know, the Big East is better this year, but you've had a run in the Big Five. Guys get better. I mean, like, you lost your security blanket. I mean, like, all of a sudden, you know, Arch leaves 1 year, Josh leaves 1 year, Chris leaves the same year, Reynolds, yet something's never changed. How have you been able to, I guess, balance your classes and get guys to, like Mikal Bridges right now. He's playing as well as anyone in the country.
Yeah, I agree.
The culture and, like what is attitude? Like, you have a book, Attitude. We talked about it before, but how do you get your guys to just that attitude of the good of the group?
You know, it takes a long time. You know, we were here our first three years, you know, I remember Dane O'Neill, who used to write for ESPN, at the beginning of our fourth year, called me. She was our beat writer to do the preseason article. She said, you know what article I have to write, right? I said, yeah, I know. She goes, I have to write. You could get fired this year, right? I said, yeah, I know. So, you know, even going into our fourth year, we hadn't had it established yet. Kind of broke through in our fourth year. And then we got it going. And what we really tried to do was establish that culture where the older guys pass it down. You know, we have a simple saying, you know, triangle. I know you've seen it a million times, but play hard, together, smart, and with pride. The pride part's at the top, where the pride is that when you get to be an upperclassman, you understand that it's not about you. It's about you passing it down to the young guys. And we've had great guys that do that. Like, Mikal Bridges had that great dunk, you know, in that game against Gonzaga. Ooh. And Randy Foy, who graduated in 06, Kerry Kittles, and Josh Hart texted him after the game and said, you know, basically in each of their own ways, texted him and said, finally, young boy, you're taking it hard to the rack. Because when he was younger, they would always get on him about being soft. And, you know, if you're going to play here, you got to be tougher. And they got through to him more than I did. And then they take pride in what he does. And he knows that's what he's supposed to do because the guys before him did it. So it takes a lot of time. And as you know, we lost it a little bit there for a year or so. It slipped, but we were lucky to get it back.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, if you don't mind, Jay. You know, you mentioned fourth year, you go 24-8, and then you're rolling. And then all of a sudden, you know, 12, 19, 14 losses. Did you change as a coach before those losses? Did you change after? Because now it's 5-3-5. You won the league four straight years. You've been a national champion. What changed with you personally in that time?
Yeah, I think it was on me more than anything, Dan. When we in 09, when we went to the Final Four. After we went to the Final Four, I thought, you know, all of us in coaching, like, you never think you're going to get there. I would go to the coaches' convention and watch those practices, you know, and I always think, wow, what it would be like to be in one of those practices when everybody comes and watches at the Final Four. You know, then you finally get there, and in our business, that's a level of respect. So I thought, okay, now you're supposed to be different. You know, like all the speaking engagements, all the, you know, all the charity stuff, I thought that's what I'm supposed to do for Villanova, you know? And you ran the program more in a corporate sense, like, you know, let the assistants do a little bit more. And I don't think I was being arrogant or anything. I just thought that's what I was supposed to do. Okay, they hired me to do this, get to the Final Four. Now I'm supposed to be, you know, a public figure for the university. And and I think I lost touch a little bit with the recruiting and the players, the kind of guys we brought in, or spending time with the guys and the assistants to get our culture through. I think it really was, I did change. And my wife was telling me that. Of course, I don't listen to my wife. She's with me all the time. And she's saying to me, like, you know what, this is not you. That's not what you're supposed to be doing. And we had a 13-19 year with no seniors, two guys leave early for the NBA on a 13-19 year.
Yeah.
And that just, I realized, like, that's not us. That's not Villanova. I better get back to it. And as you guys know more than anybody, sometimes you try to do it, but you just don't have the time. And we brought in Archie Diacono and Ochefo as freshmen that year. We snuck into the NCAA tournament, snuck in, and battled a Carolina team in the first round, really battled and lost. But we battled our butts off, and we knew, okay, we're back to playing Villanova basketball. We got the right guys. And then in 16, when we won it, I said to our staff, our job is not to win another national championship. Our job is to keep the culture. Let's make sure we get the right guys. And my job is to say no, make sure I spend time with our coaches, players, and my family, and not, you know, being a celebrity.
During that time, you know, you've been with USA Basketball. You've been with a lot of these guys. How did USA Basketball play into this whole thing for you here of late?
USA Basketball is awesome, man. It, the greatest thing for me in that was I had earlier when I was earlier in our career at Villanova, I coached the World University Games. We won a gold medal with a great team. It was one of the greatest experiences I've had in basketball because you're over in Izmir, Turkey. There's nobody with you except 15 great players. Jeff Capel was my assistant. Bobby Gonzalez, I should got a gold medal for that. Bobby is my assistant. I could write a book about that, being Izmir, Turkey with Bobby Gonzalez. But that was the greatest experience because there's no fan. Nobody knows what you're doing, and you're playing with some of the best players in the world, and it's just basketball and coaching with your assistants, and it was awesome. And then better than that has been – not better than that, but the next step was being an assistant to, Mike Krzyzewski and Jim Boeheim and those guys with the Olympic teams and help him with the trials and the preparation. And then with Pop last summer, with the developmental team, you get to be an assistant again. And you know, when you're a head coach for a long time, I just love Pop having to set up practice and me saying like, what can I do to help? All right, you run this drill. And it just being so simple and being around great players. It's just pure basketball. And I love it. And you learn so much. You just learn so much from those guys.
You know, Jay, I'm sorry, Seth, but Bobby Gonzalez, when he was at Tallentine High School, came to work camp.
Yeah,
in Indiana,
man. Yeah.
And he slept on my couch for a week, and I could write three books on him. That crazy fool on my couch.
He is the greatest.
Man. Oh, my God.
He's coaching in China, man. I still stay in touch with my text of this day. Could you imagine him in China?
No. Tell him I said hello next time you communicate
will.
With him. That crazy
I
fool.
I definitely will.
Love him. Go ahead, Seth.
Hey, I know one thing. The China thought the balls were crazy. How about the Edwin Gonzalez?
Hey, I was thinking the same thing. I wasn't going to say it, but I was thinking the same thing.
Your team this year. Your team this year, just obviously right. You got a six-man rotation, but you got good minutes out of Roundtree the other day. How important is it for you to maybe, I know you're not going to play nine, but how important is it for you to have, you got six starters with Dante DiVincenzo being a sixth starter. How important is it for you to like kind of bring a couple guys along?
It's real important. So we want to play nine, but we explained to our guys, we can't just play you tryouts, and you get to go out there and audition. We tell them we have a way that we want to play together. And if you can't go in, you don't have to go in and be a star, but if you can't keep our team at a high level of playing hard together, it's not fair to the other guys. So getting those young guys to be able to play at that level is our challenge for this season. And you're right. Besides winning that game, the most important thing for us was Jalen Brunson and DiVincenzo were in foul trouble the whole game. So we had to play Colin Gillespie and Demir Cosby Roundtree a lot more. And we've got Jermaine Samuels, another freshman. We've got to get him along. But getting Gillespie and Cosby Roundtree big minutes in that game and them playing well was huge for us because, they've played in the Garden. They've played on a huge stage. They've had success, and you're not going to get a bigger atmosphere than that. And now we can keep pushing them, and they can feel like they can do it. That's big, man. We have to get to eight, and then we'd love to get Jermaine Samuels going. If we get to nine, that's really what we want to play is nine.
Now you got league coming up, but you got your second league, and that's the Big Five. And you got a Temple team that's playing at a high level. Had a great win against Wisconsin the other day. Just like you guys have been so good in the Big Five, but the mindset of Big Five and then still getting ready for your league play. I mean, do your guys now understand still how big the Big Five is, even though you guys have dominated it?
No,
do they understand how important it is?
No, they don't. it's a great challenge because they're not they're not from Philly, and the guys that are from Philly have just watched us win these games the last few years. They don't realize how tough they are now. we did play at St. Joe, and we won, you know, by a good margin. But they did get a taste for going into an environment and feeling the intensity of the crowd in Philly. You know, I was trying to be nice about it. We all live together here in Philly, but they did get a taste of it, you know. And for instance, you mentioned Wisconsin came in and played at Temple last night, and I don't know what people in the country think if that was an upset or not, but in Philly, when those teams come in here, people in Philly just expect those teams to get beat. Like, they expect Temple to win. Like, it's no surprise to anybody in Philly. And so when we go, we have LaSalle this Sunday. Like last year, that was one of our toughest games of the year, was playing LaSalle at the Palestra. And, you know, like we do a thing before the game. It's LaSalle's home game. John Giannini calls me and says, "Hey, we're going to throw streamers out when we make the first basket onto the court. So would your guys step on the foul line so we don't make the foul shot?" Of course, you got to say yes. Like, that's the stuff that goes on in a Philadelphia Big Five game, you know. The intensity is incredible, and it does prepare us for the Big East, because no matter what those scores are, and we have had some success recently, our game with LaSalle and our game at Temple will be one of the toughest games of the year.
You guys get along?
The coaches really do a lot. Phil Martelli and Fran Dunphy run Coaches Versus Cancer here in Philly. You guys, you wouldn't believe what they do with their wives, Ree Dunphy and Judy Martelli, and our wives. We raise over $1 million a year for cancer, but those two do it right. So literally, they're the head coaches, and all of us other coaches in the Big Five, we're like the assistants. Like, they tell us what to do, we go do it. So we do a lot of stuff together in Philly. How about this guy? On Monday morning, after the selection show on Sunday, we get 1,000 people on the floor of the Palestra at 7:30 a.m., and we have a breakfast, and we talk about the NCAA tournament, all the coaches. And even us, when we're all in it, we all go, and it's the first thing we do, raise money for cancer. It's an incredible environment, great respect for each other. But the fans hate each other.
Right.
And so the games are brutal. But the coaches have great, great respect for each other and really a great friendship.
You know, most players, I don't know how you guys do it. Most players, don't they stay in the summer? Do kids play against each other? Like, is that the...
Yeah, Matt. Yeah. You know what, Dan? It's really cool. So in the summer, you know, we'll go, our guys will, the assistants kind of communicate with each other, and the players do. Like, our guys will go to play at LaSalle, and they'll play, and then, you know, Penn will come out and play at our place, and then, you know, St. Joe guys will go to Temple and play, and we just rotate around. They all play against each other, and, you know, it's open gym. They do it by themselves, and they all say, you know, they'll come back and say, "Hey, we played 9 games, you know, Temple won 5 out of 9, you know, and they, you know, now Temple's coming back to our place." So they do it all summer. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And it helps our guys a lot. Because, you know, when guys stay in the summer, get sick of playing against each other and working out against each other, it really helps a lot.
That's awesome. See,
the greatest Big Five rivalry is anyone against Villanova or St. Joe?
It's still St. Joe. Villanova is, they call it the Holy War. And we're only 7 miles from each other, and there's so many families, you know, that are, you know, Hawks marry Wildcats, and there's so many connections because we all live around each other. So that's probably that's the biggest. That's still the biggest, and everybody in the city kind of knows that. But Villanova,
so when Hawks marry Wildcats, do they marry up?
According to Wildcats, definitely. Definitely, that's part of our problem.
Oh, man. I've told my son for years, marry an athlete. Marry an athlete.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, man.
Yeah, he's dating and, you know, all in love and stuff with a field hockey player, the only left-handed field hockey player in the country, and she's an All-American. I'm like, that's smart. You want to watch football? She watch football. You want to watch basketball? She watch basketball. What are you doing? Smart.
The only reason that is because you tried to interrupt our Thanksgiving dinner with your son calling my daughter.
Yeah, well, I tried. I told him to.
Oh, boy. That's a good one, though.
That's a good
yo. If it's Jackie, hey, I saw her here in Villanova. Great athlete.
Yes.
Beautiful. Law school.
Yes.
How can you do better than that?
Hey, Jay, I'm sitting at his Thanksgiving with his mother, his wife, and I'm looking at his daughter, and I'm like, hey, dude, here's Jackie Greenberg's number. Start texting her. You're the same age. Let's go.
You're a smart man.
I know. Jay, thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate
Jay,
you taking
thanks,
some time.
Man. That was a blast. Good luck. Hey, good
great
luck this week.
Great talking to you guys. Keep doing your thing. You guys are great, man.
I'd like to thank Jay Wright for joining us. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, including the ESPN app. Please leave us a rating and leave us a good one on Apple Podcasts. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.